This podcast includes information provided by the issuer and does not express the views of the interviewer. This podcast may also include forward-looking statements by the issuer that involve certain risks and uncertainties to its business. Because forward-looking statements are subject to risks and uncertainties, the issuer's actual results could differ from those indicated in this podcast. Welcome to the Planet Microcap Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Kraft, and thank you all so much for your support. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Planet Microcap or me at Bobby K. Kraft. That's B-O-B-B-Y-K-K-R-A-F-T. You are listening to episode 5 of the Planet Microcap Podcast. Before we get started with our next interview, I wanted to catch you up on what we featured last week on StockNewsNow.com, just in case you may have missed it. We published articles highlighting video interviews with the following companies: Amarantis Bioscience Holdings Inc., AMBS, on the OTCQX, First Mining Finance Corp., FF, on the TSX Venture, and FFMGF on the OTCQB, Texas Rare Earth Resources, TRER, on the OTCQX, Delmar Pharmaceuticals Inc., DMPI, on the OTCQX, Kaizen Discovery Inc., KZD on the TSX Venture, and Cupcake Digital, a private company. We also published our latest Metals Weekly wrap-up with the Morgan Report. For this episode of the Planet Microcap Podcast, I wanted to learn more about the quantitative metrics that you can use to narrow down your search when using stock screeners. Why? In episode 4, we discussed what a stock screener is, how to use it, and why it's important. In order to use a stock screener, you have to input metrics to narrow down your search for stocks. These metrics, or quantitative metrics, at first glance can be complicated to understand. I must admit, I'm thankful I've taken a couple accounting classes to understand some of this language. However, it's not just knowing about all the different metrics. It's also about understanding why you would be screening for stocks using any particular metric. To help me with this task, I asked Fred Rockwell, founder of Tarsier Capital Management, an investment management firm focused on investing in microcap stocks. Because quantitative metrics have this accounting language to it, and with Fred's background in accounting, he's also a chartered financial analyst, CPA, professional risk manager, and a member of Mensa, I thought he'd be a great guest to discuss this topic. The goal for this episode is for us to understand what quantitative metrics mean, learning about a few metrics to experiment with on stock screeners, and why these metrics, for example, are important to know when screening for microcap stocks. Thank you again for tuning in to episode 5 of the Planet Microcap Podcast. Hope you enjoy my interview with Fred Rockwell, but first, a word from our sponsor.
A comprehensive streaming of market data, research, and portfolio management application for you. QuoteStream is a real-time streaming quotes and research system. Designed for the day trader, retail investor, institutional investor, both new and old, QuoteStream offers low latency, tick-by-tick data, advanced charting, comprehensive technical analysis, news, and research. With no software to install and no servers to maintain, QuoteStream is the ideal solution for you. Go to StockNewsNow.com and start your free 7-day trial. Click the QuoteStream banner in the header or real-time quotes in the nav bar to get started building and managing your investments.
In this episode of the Planet Microcap Podcast, I spoke with Fred Rockwell. He's the founder of Tarsier Capital Management and host of the Microcap Investing Podcast. And our topic today is defining quantitative metrics for stock screening. Fred, welcome to the Planet Microcap Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Bobby.
So I recently did Fred's podcast, which is called the Microcap Investing Podcast. And firstly, Fred, thank you so much for having me on. And for this interview, what we wanted to talk about is we wanted to define a couple quantitative metrics. We're calling this one part one because if we were to do all of the metrics that are out there, we would be here for quite a while. So today is part one, and you know, we wanted to give a background on what they are a little bit and then get into a couple definitions. But first, Fred, let's get a little background on you and Tarsier Capital Management.
Got it. Well, first off, just thank you for having me on the show. I really appreciate the opportunity. And to tell you a little bit more about me, My background is pretty mixed. So I started in accounting, I worked in consulting, and eventually went back, got an MBA, worked at a mutual fund before starting Tarsier Capital. And what really got me interested in investing was taking the CFA exam, so the Chartered Financial Analyst exams, kind of really opened my eyes to how you could use financial metrics and numbers. Like, I've always been pretty good with numbers, and that kind of opened my eyes to how I could use that to gain an advantage when investing, and that was really of interest to me. So that kind of was the impetus of getting more and more into investing. But I first started investing just right after college. You know, I lived with a couple of friends who were also all like finance majors. We were all working in finance and accounting, and we would pick stocks, not really doing deep analysis, more just kind of, you know, looking at kind of topical data, reading the news and forming opinions. But it wasn't until a little bit further down the line that I started really digging into these companies and doing deeper analysis and trying to get, like, the informational advantage that I think really gives you an edge when you're investing. So that's my background. That's how I got started in investing. And I started Tarsier Capital because I got really focused on microcaps. So over the years, I became more and more interested in investing in these small stocks. So a lot of my investing process is screening for stocks. And I found that these microcap stocks would show up pretty often on value screens and sometimes on growth screens. And I didn't really start connecting the dots until a few years ago when I bumped into websites like the Microcap Club and Oddball Stocks and OTC Adventures and started reading some of the literature about how much microcaps outperform the market and about how inefficient that market is and how it's really the best place to gain alpha. And that really got me excited about that space and made me, you know, want to go out and start a firm that's dedicated to investing in these small stocks.
So basically, the way that you got started investing in microcaps and starting to find new microcap ideas is you had this accounting background, your finance major, you came across a couple websites where they were talking about the opportunities that, you know, these big opportunities you can have when you're investing in microcaps to make a lot of money. And that's basically how you kind of got into this space and researching, you know, these microcaps.
Yeah, so I would say that, you know, what got me into researching microcaps was just they would show up so often on like value screens because, you know, it is the most inefficient market.
What are value screens?
And we're going to get into that later in the show. I don't want to get too far. I don't want to put the cart before the horse, but yeah, I would be looking for stocks, and I just found that a lot of the best values were in the microcap space, and a lot of my investments were microcap stocks. And more, I started to put the dots together. Like, why am I even investing in these? I'm not investing, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. Why am I wasting my time competing with these large institutions that have deep pockets and resources? And instead of just going after these microcap stocks where there's a structural advantage for small investors like myself. And then what took me from being someone that invested in microcap stocks some of the time to someone that invested in microcap stocks all the time was really just, you know, learning more and more about the advantages of investing in this space. Not just finding good opportunities in this space, but just learning that this is a really target-rich environment, period, for looking for stocks. So why waste my time even going anywhere else?
Okay, so now let's get into it a little bit and more to the topic of what we're talking about today, because it sounds like, you know, when it comes to when you first got started, it sounds like you had a little bit of an advantage. You had this accounting background, of course. You started looking at these microcap ideas. You're using value screens, which I'm going to ask you again what that means in a second. And you realized like, oh, I'm actually, most of the value or most of the stocks that are coming up on my screen happen to be microcaps. And, you know, I wonder if this has to do with some of the metrics that I'm putting in, you know. So to that point, you know, when you were first getting into it, and because the, you know, for this podcast, you know, we're talking to individuals who may not have had any experience looking at any balance sheet before in their life or an income statement, you know, so sometimes maybe screening for this information, yeah, it seems easy enough, you know, okay, I'm going to plug in this information. This is easy. Okay, cool. But then you're looking at it like, okay, now what am I actually looking at? How do I calculate these things? You know, some of that can seem a little daunting. I know it was for me when I first started looking at this stuff. You know, so what? How did you approach in taking in this information, you know, when you first got started doing it? Yeah, okay, you had that accounting background, but there was a point in time when you didn't know how to make, you know, we're going to talk about certain ratios that you had to, I'm assuming you had to calculate yourself. You know, how, what did you do when you first got started looking at this?
So I think the best advice I can give someone that's just starting to look at stocks and at microcap stocks is to really think about it like you're buying part of a business. And this is advice that a lot of people give, but you don't have to understand all the acronyms and all the ratios and, you know, what all the mumbo jumbo that means that's out there. Like, what you really need to think about is you're buying a share of this business. You know, it might not be 10% or 50%, but you're buying a stake in this company, and that gives you, you know, part of the future cash flows of that business, and then it also entitles you to part of the assets and liabilities also of this company. So if you were to think of that on like a really simple scale, just like someone selling lemonades on the street corner, you know, you could probably pretty simply come up with what you think a good price to pay for a lemonade stand or a hot dog stand is, because it's an easy business. You can see, you know, what money is coming in and out, you know, what's the hot dog stand worth, say it's worth $500. But then you get more and more complications when you start looking at a big company. I mean, they have all kinds of different things on their balance sheet. You have kind of different things happening on the income statement that can get complicated, you know, with different accounting. Like, are you, how exactly are you recognizing revenue or expensing things? But if you just think about it really simply, so how much cash is this company generating on a regular basis, and what are their assets minus their liabilities? So if this is a company that's sitting on a bunch of cash and has good valuable assets and returns good cash flows, and you can buy it at a good price, so, you know, I'd be happy to pay $1 for a company that returns me 20 cents every single year, and I would think that I'm getting a pretty good price on that. And if the stock price goes down to 75 cents, you know, I'm probably going to buy more. I'm not worried about what the price of that stock is, because I know I'm getting good value based on the metrics, based on the cash flows that the business is returning, and based on what their balance sheet looks like. It's more and more complicated, and we'll start looking at, you know, some of the metrics that I use to screen for stocks, so that, like, I mean, there's thousands and thousands of microcap stocks out there, and, you know, you got to start taking things off the table before you do analysis, because there's just so much and it can be daunting. And I'll tell you some of the screens that I think are valuable.
So,
but, you know, at its core, you got to just think about it like you're buying part of a business and looking at those cash flows and assets. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Right. No, no worries. Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, that was a great little explanation. You know, you want to keep it simple. You want to, especially when you're just getting started, you know, there's some sectors that are a little bit more difficult to get started investing in than others. And, you know, that's why I think it's important to have an understanding of these metrics, you know, just at least a base understanding, so that when you're narrowing down your search, you know, you're going in with some ammo, so to speak, so you don't just not waste the CEO's time when you're going to do your follow-up analysis, but also your own time, because you don't want to go in and, you know, blindly, you know. So on that note, you know, just very simply, what are quantitative metrics, and what are a few of the metrics that you use to narrow down your search?
So quantitative metrics are basically, you know, any numerical measure that helps you ascertain what the value of a business is or the health of a business. And I use a lot of different metrics. So I'll look at the EV to EBITDA, or free cash flow yield, or price to tangible book value, just to throw out a few. And what I'm looking for is, you know, getting good value. So, I mean, the name of the game really like as a value investor, is to buy a dollar for 50 cents. So buy something that's worth a dollar for 50 cents. And the way to determine that is really to use some of these quantitative metrics. And they're all based on, you know, income statement or balance sheet values. And they give you a pretty good idea of what the health of a business is a lot of the time. That being said, you know, these metrics are not, it's not all a numbers game. And, you know, a lot of people will tell you that valuation is more art than science, because there definitely is a huge component of it that's just intuition and understanding of businesses. And as you get into more and more growth investing, I mean, you have to understand that, you know, a company has to have competitive advantages, they have to have a moat, they have to have something that separates them from other businesses to be able to continue to grow quickly. And that's why what makes being a growth investor harder than being a value investor. And there aren't a lot of really famous growth investors. You know, everybody hears about like Warren Buffett and a lot of these guys that are, you know, value-centric investors. And that's because, you know, value investing has proved better over time. But there's a lot of people that make a lot of money on growth investing. And my point, I guess, is just that that's a little bit of a different skill set. I think, you know, in some ways it's a much more difficult skill set. But I'm going to talk about ways that you can find value investments, so companies where you can buy a dollar for 50 cents using some of these metrics that are out there. And I'd like to preface all this that, you know, sometimes these metrics can be misleading, and there's scenarios in which I think the metrics will sometimes mislead you, and that's when there's fraud involved, which, I mean, an astute, a savvy investor can avoid fraud, but, you know, a lot of companies will screen really well that end up being fraudulent. Value traps, so companies that appear to be selling cheap but have always really been cheap and always probably will be, because the company they don't care about the stock. You know, they use it like it's a piggy bank and don't do what's necessary, like buying back shares or things to signal the market that, you know, they care about shareholders. And for that reason, these value traps will, you know, generally not meet their intrinsic value in the market.
Now we're on to, we defined quantitative metrics, what they are, how they can be of use to you. You know, on past episodes, we talked about the screeners, everything. So now we're ready. Now let's talk about, I think we agreed to, we're going to do about five for this episode. And what we're going to do with each one is we're going to define it. We're going to explain why it's important, how it relates to microcaps, and maybe even a couple sectors that it might be typical to. So, you know, let's start with this first one. With regard to free cash flow yield, you know, what is this? What is this metric?
Free cash flow yield is basically your free cash flow per share divided by market price per share. And why is this an interesting metric? So like I was saying before, you know, you're entitled to part of the cash flows of this business when you buy a share of this stock, and you want to know what those cash flows are. And, you know, I've once adjusted EBITDA is something that, you know, a lot of companies throw out in terms of financial metrics, and that's their earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, amortization, adjusted for certain items. And I've heard Charlie Munger describe adjusted EBITDA as, pardon my French, but bullshit earnings. So you can't really fake cash. I mean, you can use accounting gimmickry to make your income statement look a little bit different. But when it comes to actual cash in the bank and your change in cash balance, I mean, it is what it is. Unless the company's a fraud, it is what it is. So I think it's very important to follow the cash and knowing what that free cash flow, the amount of cash on cash return. So you're paying a dollar for the stock and it's returning 20 cents worth of cash flow every single year. You know what your cash on cash return is. And I think that's a very powerful metric, you know, for those reasons. It can't really be faked. And if you're getting a good cash return on cash investment, I mean, that's a pretty sure sign of a good investment. Obviously, I think it's pretty hard in this market to find a company that'll give you 20 cents of return per dollar invested in terms of cash. But when you find it, you want to look into that stock because that's a good place. That's a good place to look for value. But like I said before, you have to be careful of the value traps. You have to be careful of fraud, and you have to be careful of distressed situations. So companies that are in distress, it might look like it's a great value based on, one of these screens like price to tangible book or something like that that we'll discuss later. But it could just be because this company is in a really bad situation, and their future outlook has gone significantly down, and that's the reason that it's trading at what looks like a value. But, you can use this free cash flow yield to find, stocks it's going to be a really target-rich environment because these are stocks that are likely giving you a really good return.
And so let's also, for each one, I also want to know where, can you find this on the income statement? Just in case. Yeah. As that, and also, if you're going to calculate it, where would you get the number? Would it be on the balance sheet or the income statement?
Yeah, so free cash flow, go to your cash flow statement, look at your cash flow from operations, and then subtract out your capital expenditures, and that'll give you a pretty rough idea of what your free cash flow is. And then you're just putting that over your market cap, so your number of shares times stock price.
Okay, very good. So, okay, on to metric number two. So we're going to talk about EV over EBITDA. Let's explain this one.
Got it. So we're going to, we'll compare and contrast EV to EBITDA to price to earnings to like a PE ratio. And the difference between the two, or one of the differences between the two, is your EV to EBITDA, it makes changes that will help, that will reflect the difference in like financing. So is this company heavily leveraged? If so, this metric will help make up for that difference, because earning $1 from a company that has no debt is different than earning $1 from a company that's totally leveraged up, that has tons of debt. And what EV to EBITDA is it puts your enterprise value, so your market value of common stock plus preferred equity, debt, and then minus cash would be kind of a simple calculation. And it's basically everyone that has an interest in this company. So, when you're talking about the price of a stock, that's just your equity holders. But here we're talking about, the debt holders, the preferred holders, everybody that's entitled to all the cash that's coming in the door. And then we're going to talk about all the cash, so the EBITDA, the earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. So we're not taking out that interest because all this money is going to be available to everyone that has an interest in this company, which is the interest payment, et cetera. And what this does is, instead of just looking at your price to earnings, it takes into the account, is this company heavily leveraged? Do they have a ton of debt? And if it does, then it'll have a much larger EV, and this new ratio will help you make an apples to apples comparison of two companies that don't have the exact same financial structure. Whereas your price to earnings doesn't really do that. To calculate your EV to EBITDA, I talked about calculating EV. With your EBITDA, you can look at your net income on the income statement and just add back those items. So interest, taxes, depreciation, amortization.
So basically this metric is important because you're able to compare companies that don't necessarily, that may be in the same sector or not even in the same sector, but and even if they are in the same sector, they don't do the same things. This is a metric that you would use in order to differentiate between them?
Yeah, it gives you more of an apples-to-apples comparison of a company that might have a ton of debt and a company that only has a little bit of debt. And, when you're looking at this metric, you obviously want to think about where the company falls in terms of the sector. So is this a technology company? Is this a consumer company? And, I think it's more fair to compare it to its peers. But, you know, all its peers aren't going to have the exact same capital structure, and this helps kind of make that an apples-to-apples comparison. I think the EV to EBITDA is, you know, it's a pretty good it's a pretty good metric in any sector, but, I mean, it gets pretty hard in, you know, some of these, like, in the micro-cap space, you have a lot of these high-flying growth names that are trading at, like, a multiple of sales, or, I mean, they have just tons of runway to grow, and they've been growing really fast, but haven't shown a lot of positive income, and when you have a situation like that, the EV to EBITDA doesn't make as much sense as, you know, maybe looking at, like, a price-to-sales ratio or something like that.
Yeah, so you actually led right into the next one. So how does that the EV-EBITDA ratio differ from the PE ratio that you wanted to talk about? And what is the PE ratio?
Right. So, I mean, your PE ratio is your price-to-earnings ratio.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say it's probably the most common metric used in evaluating the valuation of a company. So it's basically just your price over your earnings per share. So if you're paying $1 per share and the company has net income of 20 cents, then you have a PE ratio of 5. And you can screen, I mean, if you're just listening to this podcast and you're looking for a place to screen, you can go to like finviz.com or Yahoo has free screeners, and if you're willing to pay, like, you know, $20 a month or something like that, you can go to screener.co, which I think is, you know, a pretty good tool for the price, and you can just plug that in, like, looking for companies with a PE ratio of under 10, and it'll give you a lot of companies that are giving you pretty good earnings based on their current price. But obviously, like I've said, you know, a couple times before, and I won't keep beating a dead horse, but be careful of the value traps, the distress situations, and fraud, because those will also show up in a lot of these value screens. And what makes the PE different than the EV to EBITDA is that, you know, you're talking about the price of the stock, so that's the market cap, the value of the equity, not the value of the equity, the debt, and everything else. And the earnings is the net income, so it's after you've already subtracted out interest and money that would go to debt holders, you know, other people that have an interest in the company besides the equity holders. So, and it makes it a lot easier to compare, like I said, you know, companies with different financial structures with the EV to EBITDA. But the PE is just a simple, clean, fast way to take a quick look at a company and determine where it's trading versus its peers. And the PE, again, I mean, it's pretty valuable in all sectors. The PE and the EV to EBITDA are less valuable, I would say, in the microcap space just because you have so many companies that are unprofitable. I mean, I think it's only 15% of microcaps are actually profitable. And for that reason, you're not going to have a lot of earnings or a lot of EBITDA, and it's going to throw off your – it's going to throw these multiples off. And, you know, you have to complement looking at these with looking at something like price to sales or just the art of it, which is digging into the business and learning about their competitive advantages and moat and determining how good of a company you think it is. But based on just financial metrics, that's kind of – you know, how I like to think about the EV to EBITDA and PE ratios.
That was a really good explanation. Thank you. So I think, you know, for the last two, I think we can give more of a general overview because these two, in my opinion, were a little bit more complicated and a little more difficult to explain. So maybe just a broad overview of price to tangible book value and also for revenue compound annual growth rate and income compound annual growth rate. You know, these two were also two that you said that you also look at when you're narrowing down your search. So, you know, let's get into more why and then, you know, a quick definition about these two.
All right. And then just to hit on one other thing like that we were talking about before. So like when you're thinking about the EV to EBITDA and the PE ratio, like if you've ever watched the show Shark Tank, when these people come onto the show, they're always talking about like some idea that they have an evaluation for their company that's, you know, say $1 million when the company's only earning like, you know, $20,000 a year. And it's because these people have, you know, some idea of what they think the growth is going to be, and they think it's going to be tremendous. And, you know, everyone puts a lot of faith in themselves and thinks that they can make the growth happen in their business and that the runway is going to be huge for their company. But that's not always the case. And in the microcap space, I mean, you have a lot of these unprofitable companies, but you also have a lot of these 10 baggers. I mean, companies that you can buy for a dollar and go up to 10 bucks. And you're not going to see that in the large cap space as much. And, you know, what really helps you to identify that is being able to understand the growth. And, you know, is this a company that can keep growing? You know, one good measure of potential future growth is past growth. And obviously it's not the end all, but if a company has been able to grow at 20% per year for the last 3 years, and we're talking about the revenue CAGR right now, then, you know, it's more likely than a company whose revenue has been flat for the last 10 years. And it's a good metric to look at. So you find these companies that are growing really quickly, and that's kind of a target-rich environment to help you find these 10 baggers, not just the value stocks. So that's more of a growth metric. And then the price to tangible book, I mean, I look at a lot of banks too. So I worked with banks a lot in, you know, past life. And it's hard to measure a bank in terms of EV to EBITDA just because a bank's business model is managing interest rate risk and managing debt. And it's not, so when you're thinking about EBITDA, you're giving earnings before interest. I mean, these companies pay interest and manage debt as part of their business model. So it doesn't make as much sense to use that metric as it does to really look at like their price to tangible book value. And what price to tangible book value is, what's the price that you're paying for this stock? So you're paying a dollar for it. And what's the book value of the stock? So what are the assets minus the liabilities? And if you pay a dollar for the stock and the company has a dollar, you know, it has a hot dog stand that's worth a dollar, but it owes some guy, you know, 30 cents, then your book value is 70 cents. And I think it gives you like a good margin of safety. So if you have a company that has, you know, a high book value, it has a lot of assets, it gives you somewhat of a floor on how low the stock can fall. And you're always looking for asymmetric return potential. So if you have a stock that it's trading pretty near its tangible book value, it has much more room to go up than it does to go down, because tangible book value is basically, and this is also a simplistic explanation of what it is, but it's if you were just to go out and just sell everything that the company owns today, that's how much money you would have back in your pocket. So if it's trading pretty near what you could liquidate the company for today, then the upside has to be much more than what the downside is. And then where the tangible book value comes in, not just the book value, is when you start subtracting out like your goodwill and your intangible assets, because, I mean, if you were going to liquidate the company, no one's going to pay you for goodwill or for intangible assets. And you know, you'll find a lot of tech companies have a ton of that on their books. A lot of companies that do a lot of acquisitions and pay a premium will have a lot of goodwill on their books.
You know, what's the takeaway from this part one discussion of different metrics? You know, takeaways, the difference between value and growth investor, and, you know, also where we can find out more information on Tar Sierra Capital Management.
This podcast would be, when you go out and you buy a stock, know why you're buying it. And you know, a lot of times that'll be because of its financial metrics. So if you're buying a company because you think you're making a good return, like you're getting either a good cash flow return or net income return on every dollar that you invest, then you know, be sure to monitor that and use these metrics to be able to identify opportunities when looking for stocks to buy. Always be wary of the value traps. So situations where maybe management owns a ton of the company, they never repurchase shares, they're not very shareholder friendly, and the stock always seems to be trading below its intrinsic value. Beware of fraud. So I mean, a lot of companies that come out of China happen to be frauds. You know, a lot of companies that list on the OTC based on a reverse takeover. And, you know, be careful of distressed situations. So companies that seem to have good price to earnings, but it's based on, you know, a deteriorating financial position of the company. You know, maybe next year's earnings aren't going to look that great. So be wary of those things, but these metrics will give you a good place to look, you know, for value stocks, because, you know, you're looking for companies that are giving you a good return based on, you know, what's out there in the market. And the difference between value and growth really is, with value, you're looking to pay a good price today for what the company's business looks like today. So you're trying to buy that dollar for 50 cents based on whatever metric, so price to earnings or EV to EBITDA. And it's also important, we didn't even really get into talking about what multiples are in different spaces, but I mean, different sectors have different multiples, and you want to pay a good price relative to their peers. But then with a growth investment, and you know, I consider myself more of a value guy, but I make a lot of growth investments. Just when I make a growth investment, I still want to pay a discounted price. I'm happy to buy a growth company, but when I buy it today, I still want to pay 50 cents for a dollar. I'd rather buy a growth investment. I'd rather have the company grow a ton and I get it at a cheap price today. I'm just not willing to pay as much for growth because of the amount of uncertainty. And, you know, growth investors are not looking at metrics like price to tangible book value as much, or EV to EBITDA, because these are companies that maybe don't have a ton of earnings. They're reinvesting every penny trying to grow the company. And, you know, maybe they don't have a ton of book value, but they have a ton of runway and potential to keep growing for an extended period of time. And that's kind of more of an art. I mean, there's a lot of really successful growth investors out there, especially in the microcap space, because Apple might grow 10% next year, but it's not going to be a 10-bagger. Whereas in the microcap space, you know, there's tons of 10-baggers, and a lot of them are these growth stocks. So that's the kind of the difference there. And, you know, another tip is there's also the momentum investors, the guys that are trying to buy stocks that have been going up in value over the last 6 months or year or however long. But I think it's more important to know that you're buying a share of a business. So you're buying the share of this business, and you're buying it for its future cash flows and for its, you know, current book value. And if you think about it like that, if the stock price goes down, you know, you're happy to even buy more stock because you're just buying it at a discount. You know, before you were getting a good price, now you're getting an even better price. And invest with conviction. Know why you're buying something, because it makes it a lot easier to really love an idea and to know a lot about it, and put it, you know, put your money into it, than it is to be, you know, moving and trading stocks all the time and having to monitor positions like constantly. I know one kind of interesting thing that so Nate Tobik from Oddball Stocks was telling me the other day that Fidelity did a study of, you know, the people that had the best returns. So they were studying everybody that invested with Fidelity, and they found two groups of people that had much better returns than everybody else, and that was people that were dead that had a Fidelity account, and then people that had a Fidelity account and had forgotten that they had a Fidelity account. And basically the point is that, you know, your average personal investor is just making way too many transactions, paying too many transaction costs, and it's a lot of the times it's better to just kind of buy something and hold on to it for the long term and look for those investments that you can hold for a longer period of time.
So where can our audience go and find more information on Tarsier Capital Management and also your upcoming conference, the MicroCap Conference, coming up in November?
You can find out more about Tarsier Capital at www.tarsiercm.com. And we also have a blog called thebulldoginvestor.com and the podcast MicroCap Investing that's available on Stitcher Radio and iTunes. And yeah, we're having a microcap conference on November 5th. It should be a lot of fun. We're trying to bring, you know, what we think are 25 of the best companies to present to an audience capped at 150 people. It's in Philadelphia, Center City, Philly. And you can find information about that on our website. We're going to be updating it here in the next coming weeks. And that's www.microcapconf.com.
All right. Thanks so much, Fred. And you can also follow Fred on Twitter at TarsierCM. So that's TarsierCM.
Sorry I didn't pick a name that's easier to spell. I feel like I have to spell that out every time I say it.
Don't worry, dude. I got you, okay?
All right.
All right. Fred, thank you so much for coming on to the podcast, and I look forward to doing part two soon.
Yeah, great. Let me know anytime.
All right. Thanks, man.
Hi, I'm Shelley Kraft, and this is Ask Mr. Wall Street. Today's question is, as a microcap investor, when there's big losses in the Dow and NASDAQ, like this week, what do I do? Let's first look at cause and effect. What is the reason for the big drop in the Dow and NASDAQ? This week, it seems to me the market is telling us that it's down on news from China, where the second largest economy in the world is slowing down. Back here in the U.S., the largest economy in the world, things are still going pretty well. Sure, interest rates rising soon were the lead story before China, but when investors pulled the plug in China, the market had a sell-off from historical highs, which would be a natural occurrence. So in reality, nothing much has changed in the U.S. except for major margin calls. So precipitous, selling is not only China fears and interest rates rising expectations, but it comes down to the serious margin calls themselves. Microcap investors should always take into consideration the huge drops in the larger cap markets for a few reasons. The number one reason is bargain hunting. What have you been looking for while you were waiting for the right time to buy? I bet that price is in the neighborhood you were looking for about now. That's indicative of using opportunity to buy, just like run-ups are an opportunity to sell. Number two reason is the big sell-offs of the big board and NASDAQ. Smart money sits and waits for opportunities to come to them. So placing orders nearer to the bid rather than buying middle to ask is an age-old strategy. The number three reason is to look for good news coming out of followed symbols, because chances are that normally the good news would provide an incentive for investors to jump in, but confusion, worry, fear, and risk-averse strategies cause many investors to freeze in the headlines. So buy good news when indices are dropping, because once the dust settles, the buying will catch up to the good news, and you had the opportunity to buy when everyone else was frozen. Margin calls can sometimes drill deeply into investors' portfolios. I am not a big fan of margin. Margin calls are a worst-case scenario, especially if you are fully invested. The liquidation of stocks by custodian firms is ruthless, leaving you with less control than you would hope for. Determining what to sell to cover margin calls oftentimes forces investors to sell stocks not owned on margin, which in general are mostly microcap stocks, which also are not generally marginable. Going to cash is easy if the liquidity is there on microcaps, so dumping to cover margin calls is just par for the course. As microcap investors, we get to see lower prices for no apparent reason other than margin calls, so following a company closely makes you aware of the good, the bad, and the ugly. So as Franklin D. Roosevelt said in his first inaugural address, only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Thank you all for tuning in to the Planet Microcap podcast, and thank you, Fred, again for coming on to the program. You can access the podcast by going on to stocknewsnow.com under podcast, go to podbean.com and search Planet Microcap podcast, or on iTunes and search Planet Microcap podcast. Stay tuned for the next episode of the Planet Microcap podcast, where we'll have our next week in review, answer a new question from Ask Mr. Wall Street, and have another exciting guest to discuss all things microcap. If you have any questions or comments about the podcast or for Ask Mr. Wall Street, please send an email to info@stocknewsnow.com. I'd love to hear from all of you. This podcast has been brought to you by SNN Incorporated, publishers of StockNewsNow.com, the official microcap news source, and the Microcap Review magazine. I'm your host, Robert Kraft, and thank you again for joining me on the Planet Microcap Podcast. Have a great week, everyone.